All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am discussing the breaking news of the Matt Ryan $150 million contract extension that broke today on Thursday.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know it's me, Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, also on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are discussing my rapid reaction to the news of Matt Ryan's massive contract extension. If you did not hear, this has been something that the Falcons have been working on for the last several months, was their biggest priority this offseason, per Thomas Dimitroff, per Arthur Blank, per anybody that you talk to within that organization. So the Falcons made the decision, the move to re-sign Matt Ryan. He becomes the first player ever in NFL history to make $30 million a year per year, with a five-year, $150 million extension that keeps him locked up in Atlanta through 2023. He's also the first player to ever get $100 million in guaranteed money. That was part of the contract. We don't know the exact terms of what Matt Ryan's deal is. I'm sure we'll get more of that information over the course of the weekend, and we certainly can get more in depth in the coming days on this podcast about the exact details and the exact implications of that contract and the terms of it. We will discuss a little bit with limited information. It wouldn't be the first time we've talked about things with limited information on this podcast, but we will discuss some of the cap implications later on in today's episode. We will also talk about whether or not Matt Ryan is really worth it in terms of this money. That's an argument that you'll often see at this time of year when a guy makes a contract extension as big as this one. I have some thoughts on that. I certainly will weigh in on that here at the beginning of the show as well as towards the end of the show. But to get into that a little bit, I do think, you know, the argument that Matt Ryan isn't worth it is kind of silly to me. I think the Matt Ryan contract extension has been in the pipe for almost 2 years at this point. You might have been questioning whether or not the Falcons should think about extending him following a disappointing 2015 season, but I think unless he had absolutely bombed that 2016 year, there was really no chance that the Falcons wouldn't have tried to re-sign him after that point. Like, and when I say bomb it, I mean like, you know, Matt Schaub final year in Houston where he throws like 12 pick sixes level of bad. And so I think once the minute in that 2016 year where Matt Ryan started playing at an MVP level, the whole notion that he wouldn't get a contract extension from the Falcons, basically that ship had sailed at that point. So I think if you're sitting here today upset that the Falcons are paying Matt Ryan, I just want to know what rock have you been living under for the last 18 months where you didn't know this was an inevitability? I'm just curious where you can go to be either that unplugged from the world or simply that ignorant of how things work in the NFL. So I think if you're of the mindset of, oh, man, the Falcons should have tried to get a deal done with Matt Ryan following the 2016 season, they could have saved so much money, I think you wouldn't have been wrong. I think that's actually a good take because I had that take. They would have been operating off the Andrew Luck template as opposed to the Matt Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins sort of templates. But even still, you're not talking about a huge amount of savings. You're still talking about a deal that's probably giving him $85 to $90 million in guarantees, something that averages $25 or more million a year. So you're only really talking about maybe a savings of maybe $10 to $15 million over the first 3 or 4 years of the contract, which works out to be about $3 or $4 million a year, which is nothing to scoff at, nothing to sneeze at. That's worth one Brandon Fusco. That's worth two Justin Bethels. But it's not necessarily a huge amount of money that's going to be, you know, franchise changing unless, you know, you go out and you sign a guy for a Brandon Fusco or Justin Bethel level contract and that guy turns into, you know, Zach Martin or Robert Alford or whoever, you know, insert top cornerback that's better than Justin Betho here. So, you know, I think they could have or should have gotten that deal done a year ago and would have saved them some money. But alas, it was not to be. And I think if you're one of those people that also believes that, hey, man, you can't, it's hard to win in the NFL when you have quarterbacks making this huge, huge amount of money, you're absolutely right. There is empirical data saying that it is harder to build up the rest of your roster when your quarterback is taking up a huge, huge chunk of money like Matt Ryan and like some of these other top-end quarterbacks are. But, you know, here's where I would have a raise a point of contention. It's not as if having a guy on a rookie contract is guaranteed success. You know, when was the last time a quarterback on a rookie contract won a Super Bowl? That was Russell Wilson, oh so many years ago. You could certainly, you know, stretch things and say, well, Carson Wentz, you know, and if not for injury, you know, yeah, okay. I'll let that one slide. But, you know, other than sort of the heyday of Flacco and Colin Kaepernick that 1 year, because, you know, Cam Newton technically was on his second contract when they went to the Super Bowl because he was 7 months into it when they went to the Super Bowl. You can't really talk about any of the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, at the very least, that are, you know, getting paid pennies. You know, you got Tom Brady, you got Peyton Manning, you got Matt Ryan the last couple of years that have been those Super Bowl caliber quarterbacks. And, you know, so I think, you know, the argument that, oh, if you have a quarterback making $20 million plus, that's the death knell. That ruins, that absolutely ends any chance of you being able to win a Super Bowl. Clearly, the data suggests that that is not a true statement. But certainly, if you do have a quarterback that's making that type of jack, then you do have to make some sort of significant cost-cutting measures. The Falcons have done this basically by having their entire defense on a rookie contract, with the exception of the free agents that they've signed the last couple of years, like a Brooks Reed, like a Jack Crawford, like a Derek Shelby, et cetera. And we know the Patriots are well known for their not being open with their wallets in the Belichick era. So you certainly do have to make an effort. The fact that you have a highly paid quarterback is certainly an obstacle to success, but is not an insurmountable hurdle. And I think when you think about it that way, it's like, okay, would I rather have this guy, this proven good quarterback making a buttload of money versus the alternative, which is having a rookie quarterback that is at best a 50-50 proposition. And when you consider that when you're not picking high, very, very high in the draft, it's much less than a 50-50 proposition. And when you look at it in terms of really sort of significantly guaranteeing your success, you basically would have to then trade up into the top three or so picks and give up what multiple first round picks most of the time in order to pull that off, like the Eagles did with Carson Wentz. You know, because the data suggests that to be able to find a franchise quarterback that if you don't have that top three pick, the chances of you finding a franchise quarterback that is as good or better than Matt Ryan, at least when you look at the data stretching back, you know, 15, 20 years, you know, that's going to give you more than what Matt Ryan is going to give this team over the next 5 or so years, the chances of you finding that guy is less than 5%. And, you know, that's something, you know, to me, the idea of like, oh, no, it's better to go with something, a strategy that involves getting rid of Matt Ryan and going with a strategy that either requires you to give up multiple first round picks or to go with a strategy that has like a 95% or above failure rate. I don't really understand that, but this is something that we will circle back to at the end of the show. But I want to talk more about the, sort of the immediate implications of what this signing means for the rest of the Falcons roster in just a bit. But I also want to plug in the Locked On NFL Draft podcast hosted by John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. If you want to get their thoughts on who did well in the draft, who did not do well in draft, including the Atlanta Falcons, check out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about what this move does for the Falcons. You know, I'm imagining a scenario where the Falcons sort of got this deal done maybe slightly before the draft. You know, I don't have any inside information, but it just seems like given the timing that maybe they were like, okay, we are, or like maybe they're like 98% done in the last 2%. They just needed a couple of days after the draft to get hammered out before they announced it. But, you know, this move in terms of the expectation for me, myself, I didn't really have any expectations for a timetable when this move would get done. It could have got done in May. It could have got done in late July. And so it was basically you had this 3-month window when this deal would eventually land. And so I'm certainly glad that it's happening right now, because I think having the timing right now is potentially, let's say that, not definitely, but potentially could benefit the Falcons as they look to supplement their roster in this post-draft landscape. When you look at it, the deadline for when compensatory picks ends is May 8th, which means what that means is basically if you sign a player after May 8th, so if you sign a player on May 9th, it no longer is counted towards the compensatory pick formula. And so if you're the Falcons looking right now based off of overthecap.com's projections, which were pretty accurate this past season, the Falcons are slated to get, I think, a fourth and a fifth round pick in next year's draft due to the losses that they had, I think, with Poe and Gabriel this year. And so it basically, if they sign a player to a monster deal, a free agent, let's say that, to a monster deal on May 9th, then that player is no longer going to count against that. And so they're not in a position to lose those fourth and fifth round picks like they would had they signed a player to a significant contract a month or so ago during the height of free agency. So I think, you know, this is a positive for the Falcons. I do think there are some spotty areas of their roster, particularly the defensive tackle position. There's certainly some other areas that they could tweak, fullback. You know, some people have argued tight end. You could also argue linebacker depth. You know, I think really that's just basically you have to make a decision whether you want to re-sign Leroy Reynolds or not. And, you know, certainly depending on how they want to use Foye Olukun as a rookie, maybe a backup strong safety. So those are some areas, but I think primarily defensive tackle is the one roster spot that I would say is a glaring issue, at least to the point where I would feel very uncomfortable if the Falcons do not add at least one veteran player before the start of training camp. I think the other positions you can sort of play it by ear and see, you know, kick the tires on some of these guys in a couple of weeks in the camp and see how they do before you decide to make a decision in terms of maybe pulling off a trade or maybe going off and scooping some guy off the waiver wire when we get into August. I just think the Falcons have shown, we saw last season, that the Falcons really can't make it with three defensive tackles on the roster, which currently I'm considering to be Grady Jarrett, Jack Crawford, and Deidre Sinnott. No offense to any of you that are Garrison Smith, Justin Zimmer, or Joey Ivey stands out there. Maybe one of those guys emerges in training camp, but I just can't imagine a world where you take a practice squad guy like a Joey Ivey or two quote-unquote camp bodies like a Garrison Smith and Justin Zimmer, who you just signed, what, like 2 weeks ago, as being like, oh, one of these guys is going to step up and be able to give this team the 20 to 25 snaps a game that you really need in that fourth defensive tackle, that fourth guy in the rotation. I just don't think that's possible. You know, I don't think that's the plan. Let's say I won't sit here and dismiss those guys. Maybe one of those guys merges and plays and balls out this summer. But I certainly would not go into training camp thinking that is definitely going to happen. That's just more of a cherry on top, not the sundae, so to speak. So I think where the Matt Ryan deal sort of mixes into this, I think it does create some cap room. I've seen the low end estimates saying there's probably at least $3 million in cap that they'll save off of Matt Ryan's 2018 cap hit, which is currently $21.65 million. I've seen some higher end estimates that saying that may be $7 or $8 million. So, you know, we don't know the exact terms again of this contract, but my estimation is we'll probably see Matt Ryan as part of this extension. Matt Ryan's cap hit in 2018 get lowered somewhere between like 14 and 18 million or so, something around there. So that will give the Falcons some immediate cap relief that they can go out and then use to sign a player. You know, the more that money is, the more they shave off the cap, the more it becomes a more realistic possibility that they could go out and get a guy like a Jonathan Hankins, who I know is a guy that many of us covet, who clearly is head and heels better than any of the other D tackles available. I think I wouldn't hold my breath too hard for Jonathan Hankins, just because we saw last year him holding out to what, mid-April, to get his price point, and he made what, $10.5 million in a multi-year contract. But the Colts decided to get rid of him after 1 year, in his 1 year in Indianapolis. So I do think it's going to be hard to get him on a cheap deal. I don't think you're going to get a hometown discount for Jonathan Hankins. Let's say that, especially when you consider that his hometown is Detroit rather than Atlanta. But so I do think that still does lead. However, even if you can't afford a player like Hankins, there are still options out there. You have a Tyler Rubin, you have Courtney Upshaw, you have Cedric Thornton, Tyron Walker, Carl Kluge, Jordan Hill, Tony McDaniel, Jared Craig, any number of defensive tackles. Are any of these moves sexy moves? No. But when you're looking for a fourth defensive tackle that's only going to give you 20, 25 snaps, particularly in the run situations, I think, where you're really looking for that value so you can keep Grady Jarrett fresh for those nickel downs and keep a Jack Crawford fresh for those nickel downs and sub in Deidre Sinnott if you plan on employing him in those nickel situations. You just want to get a guy that can give you positive snaps in the base defense against the run that sort of can keep your pass rushers, your interior pass rushers, as fresh as possible. I say that not because just because I don't necessarily have a horse in the race. I know people would be like, who should the Falcons sign as D-tackle? And I'm like, I don't really care. Just get a body out there that's actually had some NFL experience, unlike Garrison Smith and Justin Zimmer and company. So I think, you know, even if you just get a guy that's on a veteran minimum deal that just sort of keeps that spot warm until you get into August, where you can start looking around for maybe some waiver wire type of guys that can be that sort of upgrade, that to me is a worthwhile move. You know, we just saw earlier today the Dolphins traded for Akeem Spence. They gave up a conditional seventh round pick for him, if I saw the terms correctly. And you're probably sitting there like, why couldn't the Falcons make a move like that? Well, the problem is the Falcons would have had to absorb, I think, about $2.4 million in terms of Akeem Smith's base salary, even after the restructure that he did, and the Falcons couldn't do that because they only have, according to NFLPA records, $1.3 million in cap space. And so, you know, that's part of the reason why this Matt Ryan deal is beneficial, because it should create some immediate cap room for the Falcons to give them a little bit more flexibility that if they do want to go out and get a veteran player on the cheap, they can do so. The big question with the Falcons finances at this point in time is they're going to get some money in June, starting on June 2nd, when Levine Toilolo's money comes off the books. That's going to be about $3.5 million in cap savings. They also have the Jake Matthews contract extension that we assume is going to be, you know, the next sort of move that the Falcons start making now that the Ryan deal is under, has been, you know, signed on the dotted line. So that's another move that you hope, you know, could get done much sooner than, you know, the months it took the Ryan deal, because basically you're just looking at that Nate Solder contract probably and saying, okay, just give him a little bit more, tweak that a little bit, and then we'll give that to Jake. You look at that Solder contract, he signed a 4-year, $62 million deal with the Giants this past offseason. If you assume that the Falcons give him the exact same contract, which is not a good assumption, but let's assume that for the sake of argument here, then that would also then lower Jake Matthews' cap hit from about $12.6 million in 2018 to about $10 million in 2018, because that's what Solder's cap hit is in 2018. So you could say that getting Jake Matthews a contract extension in the near future, in the next 4 to 6 weeks, would save the Falcons another $2.5 million. And so when you do the math on this, what's going to be interesting is with the Falcons, when they decide to sign the rookies, because based off of overthecap.com, their rookie pool is going to be about $5.2 million. Obviously, with the $1.3 million they have currently under the cap, they don't have enough to really sign anybody other than maybe one or two of their late-round picks at this point in time. So they're going to need to create about another $4 million in cap space. Maybe they get that from the Ryan deal. Maybe they decide to use that money that they get from the Ryan deal to sign a defensive tackle. Now that, guys, there's more players available now, and they wait until June when they get the Toilolo money, when they get the Jake Matthews money, and then use that to sign the rookies. Or maybe they sign the rookies now and then wait until June to get that extra money and then use that to sign, you know, maybe a guy out there once they've gone through mini camps, once they've been able to sort of assess the roster a little bit more and say like, okay, these are areas where we need to address it. Basically, the bottom line is the Falcons have some flexibility. So don't necessarily, you know, have a cow if the Falcons don't go out in the next 2 weeks and make a move that you think they should be making. You know, they got to finesse this a little bit. That's the point I'm trying to get. So I think when you do the math, and again, these are very rough estimates. Let's imagine, you know, you get 3.5 from Toilolo, you get 2.5 from Jake. So that means probably in the next month or so, you're getting about $6 million in cap savings between those two guys. If you assume that, let's just give an estimate, a rough estimate for Ryan, that's a $5 million. So that's about $11 million in addition to the 1.3. So you got about $12.3 million in cap coming for the Falcons before training camp. Now, again, about 5.2 of that is going to go to the rookies. So that leaves you with about $7 million. Now, presumably some people are like, oh, that's $7 million that you can spend. Go out and give Jonathan Hankins a one-year $7 million deal or something like that. Well, here's the rub. I think the problem is going to be the Falcons aren't going to necessarily want to spend all that money. They're going to want to have a little bit of a wiggle room, a little bit of a cushion going into training camp in case they need to further adjust their roster during training camp, during the season. And typically that cushion, for most teams, I think most teams try to get at least $2 million, at least $3 million, if not more. So in reality, you're only really talking about maybe $2 or $3 million of true spending room that the Falcons potentially have over the next couple of weeks. So that is something to keep an eye on. Well, so that's one of the reasons why I'm like, I wouldn't hold your breath on the Jonathan Hankins move, but who knows? Again, these are rough estimates. I'm not sort of speaking like I know the cap implication. I'm just trying to give you guys a rough idea of sort of what's plausible or what's more or less plausible if the Falcons are going to make moves. The Falcons could very well sit here, as Dimitroff likes to do these things out of spite and say like, no, we're fine with our roster. We're not going to tweak it at all. We'll wait and see what happens in August. And if they want to do that, that's their choice. Look, I'll just sit here and grumble about it on this podcast, but I'm not going to sit here and be like, that's a bad choice. I just, you know, they've earned the right to basically force me to grumble, I guess is what I'm saying. So, I mean, that's really sort of the implications of the Ryan deal. I think it's a good move for the Falcons. The timing could be very beneficial for the Falcons, or they could just sort of twiddle their thumbs for the next 6 weeks and, you know, I'll just grumble about it on the podcast and that'll be fine as well. You know, it's not like them not signing a defensive tackle in the next 6 weeks is going to doom them to a 4-12 season or anything like that. So let's be clear about that. So that's really all I want to say about the implications of the Matt Ryan deal. Let's circle back and discuss the whole notion of whether or not Matt Ryan deserves or is worth the money in a moment. But I also want to plug the LockedOnSports.com website, where you can find links to all the content produced by the Lockdown Podcast Network, articles, podcasts, and more on the NBA side, the NFL side, and of course now Major League Baseball as well. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com. So I'm not going to, I'm going to try not to spend too much time ranting about the whole Matt Ryan, is he worth it, is he good, arguments that you'll see over the, or you've probably seen on Twitter over the last 24 hours and probably will see over the next 24 months. I still don't understand why people have these arguments, but, you know, people got to fight about something online. So, you know, for me, it's one of those things like after the 2015 season, I stopped really arguing with people about whether Matt Ryan is good because, you know, I think at this point in time, we've had 10 years of Matt Ryan. And if you think Matt Ryan's not good, then there's nothing I'm going to say to you, given that, you know, you basically had the same 10 years to come to X conclusion. I've had 10 years to come to Y conclusion. There is nothing I'm going to say to you that's going to change X. Just like there's nothing you're going to say to me that's going to change Y. So I think people that fight about Matt Ryan online, I think I won't say they do it to get attention, but it's just kind of pointless. So that's one of the reasons why what I was talking about earlier, like after 2015, I switched tactics. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to convince you that your opinion of Matt Ryan is different. Like personally, you know, full disclosure, I don't think Matt Ryan's an elite quarterback, at least by the terms I define elite, which is a guy that you can make a strong, compelling argument is the best player at his position. I think you can only really make that argument about Aaron Rodgers. I think and Tom Brady currently in the NFL. In previous years, you could have made that argument for Peyton Manning. In previous years, you could have made that argument for Brett Favre or Drew Brees. I think outside of those five guys, I don't think there has been an elite quarterback playing in the league for the last 10 years, in my humble opinion. And maybe I'm forgetting one guy that had one elite year outside of that. But you can have an elite year, but that doesn't make you an elite quarterback in my eyes. That's what I think about Matt Ryan. I think he's probably a notch or two below that elite level. I think he's a top 10 quarterback. I think he's consistently been a top 10 quarterback throughout, at least since 2010. With one or two years where he might have fallen down to 12th or 13th, you know? But I think he's pretty consistently been in that 5 to 12 range throughout his entire career. I personally don't understand, if you have a quarterback that good, why you're complaining about him. Is he perfect? Absolutely not. But, like, I don't get that. But, you know, as for the sort of the arguments against Matt Ryan, like, if, again, outlining what I said before, it's like, I just look at it and I say, you know, I switched tactics a couple of years ago because it's like, I can't convince people that their opinion about Matt Ryan is wrong. Again, even 3 years ago, it was like, you've had 7 years of watching Matt Ryan. There's nothing I'm going to say to you that's going to convince you that your interpretation of the previous 7 years is wrong and my interpretation of the previous 7 years is right. Just like sitting here today and arguing with people whether Matt Ryan is good 10 years into his career is just kind of dumb to me. It's a waste of air. I'm not going to say it's dumb. It's just, you're just wasting your time. You're wasting your breath. Just let people be them. So I switched tactics and basically just said, like, I can't convince you that your X opinion or your Y opinion is wrong. But what I can convince you is give you empirical data that suggests, even if you're not a big fan of Matt Ryan, even if you believe that the reason why the Falcons haven't won a Super Bowl in the last 10 years is primarily because Matt Ryan is not a good enough quarterback to win a Super Bowl, which is an opinion. It's not necessarily one I agree with, but it's an opinion. Then the alternative is, like, do you want to go out and overpay for one of these mid-tier quarterbacks that's clearly not as good as Matt Ryan? Do you want to go out there and get a Blake Bortles? Or do you want to basically risk it all and hope that, you know, next year there's a great quarterback, there's a Carson Wentz, there's a Josh Rosen, and then throw away, you know, mortgage your future? The whole argument that many people have made that why not pay Matt Ryan because it's hurting your ability to build up the rest of your roster, but then you're going to do that again, basically to trade up into the top three to get one of these quarterbacks. Just to me, how does that process in your brain? And that to me, I think is where really the flaws in the thinking. It's just, to a lot of people, to some people, I won't necessarily characterize everybody like that, because I know plenty of smart Falcon fans that I'm friends with that don't have the glowingest opinions of Matt Ryan. And I respect those people enough to basically, you know, just leave it alone with that. But it's one of those things where it's like, I think for some people, it's just like, I just hate Matt Ryan. And, you know, I don't see any reason for that. And so I just think the idea that the Falcons shouldn't have paid Matt Ryan or whatever the case may be, or should go cheap at the position, or just basically get rid of Matt Ryan in the slim possibility that they'll land the next Russell Wilson, or they'll land the next, you know, even if you look at a guy like Lamar Jackson, like, oh, the Falcons had a perfect opportunity to snatch up Lamar Jackson. Okay, like, you're absolutely right. I'm a big fan of Lamar Jackson. I don't think he's this, you know, world-shattering quarterback, but he's certainly, you know, as a consolation prize, wouldn't have been a horrible, horrible thing. But when you look at it, it's like, I mean, do I think Lamar Jackson's going to win the Falcons, you know, 48 or so games over the next 5 years? I mean, maybe, you know, but like, why did I pick that 48 game number? Well, you know, if you look at Matt Ryan's win percentage under Dan Quinn over a 5 year period, that projects to be about 48 wins, 9.5 or so wins per season. Do I think Lamar Jackson's going to be that guy? I mean, maybe. It's possible. I mean, you look over the last 20 years, there's been about five quarterbacks, including Matt Ryan, that have been that guy. I think Matt Ryan, Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Russell Wilson, and Ben Roethlisberger are the only guys drafted in the last 20 years that have won 48 or more games in their first 5 years in the NFL.
Hey, and look, you can say whatever you want about quarterback wins, but nobody in the past 20 years, in the first 5 years of their NFL careers, has won more games than Matt Ryan did. So I don't know. Just like, it just feels like people, you know, feel how you want to feel about Matt Ryan, but like, he does his job, and I don't understand why, for whatever reason, that's not good enough for some people.
And so it's one of those things where you just look at the situation, and I'll stop my rant right about here. But I just think the idea that, you know, the Falcons can realize, like, again, if you don't think Matt Ryan's a great quarterback, then fine. But if you think that getting rid of Matt Ryan or not paying Matt Ryan gives the Falcons a better chance of winning games, then I just think you're crazy. I just don't think you really have done any amount of research. I just think you're just sitting there, you know, with a little placard on the street corner, just, you know, yelling stuff at the top of your lungs. And I think for the people out there that are of my opinion, that frequently engage with these fans, whether they be fans of the Falcons or fans of other teams that engage, I just think, why? Like, why do you do it? Like, I don't understand. What do you get out of it? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, maybe you get to own a guy online or own a girl online or something like that. Maybe that, you know, that's what you live for. It certainly has, you know, I've known that feeling a time or two. But at this point in time, it's just like, whatever, man. Like, if you don't think Matt Ryan's good, good. Then fine. I'll just enjoy my team's quarterback for the next 5 to 7 years while that person can wallow in misery and do whatever they want to do. And that's coming from me, guys. You know, the most miserable Falcon fan in the world. And I'm sitting here saying, like, you know, that's just pathetic. I don't know. Strong words from a strong man. But, I mean, that's where I'll end it here. I'll just stop with my rambling rant here at this point in time. I just think the whole argument of whether he's worth it or whether he's good, it's just kind of dead at this point. I just think you're beating a dead horse at this point. You know, he's definitely better than BJ Hill, right? I couldn't help myself, right? I couldn't help myself at all. Talk about beating a dead horse. Oh, man, I can't wait till we do that DJ Scott report. I'm going to mention BJ Hill more times in that Scott report than I did than I do BJ DJ Scott. So anyway, guys, that's it. Hopefully on Monday we'll have more details and we can sort of talk a little bit more about what exactly the sort of salary cap benefits and implications of this move mean for the Falcons in the near term with more of those details. And if not, then we'll just keep this thing rolling along. We'll talk more about the Falcons draft class. Keep an eye out for that Isaiah Oliver scouting report next week, as well as future episodes dealing with all the Falcons draft picks. We'll have much more content and more. In the meantime, if you want to get your feedback back to me, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Lockdown Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you prefer Facebook, Lockdown Falcons is the Facebook page. Email address is lockdownfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at lockdownfalcons.com or falcfans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So that's it, guys. You know, Matt Ryan's got paid. Hopefully he can hook a brother up. I just had to spend a whole bunch of money to get my brakes fixed on my car. It cost me much more than I thought it would. And so I could use, you know, a little bit of Matt Ryan's cash. So I'm not going to envy that man for making some money. Definitely not me. So, you know, hook me up. Until then, guys and gals.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.